1590 WAKR Akron News Talk Sports. Sam and Brad show live from the Quicken Loans Arena. Game 2 coming up tonight. Also in action, our Cleveland Indians getting ready for a 4-game set against the Twins, starting the year off 5-7. Danny Salazar on the hill for the good guys tonight, here to break down the matchup and take a closer look at the Cleveland Indians as Matt Lodi, NEO Sports Insider, does a great job of covering all things Cleveland sports and, of course, the Tribe. Matt, we start off 5-7. Edwin starting off slow. He's kind of a slow starter historically throughout his career. When you look at this team, any worries thus far 12 games into the season?
No, I'm not really worried about this. I mean, I do realize that, you know, fan expectations are so incredibly high that, you know, the ones that don't quite understand baseball, and I'm certainly not, you know, here to put anybody down per se, but there are a lot of people that felt like after that first 3 games in Texas, like this thing was going to be a cakewalk. And
right.
If you've covered baseball, if you watch baseball, if you know baseball, it, the month of April, you just want to stand water. You just want to stay, you know, you just want to kind of stay 500 if you can, really. I mean, there's just not a real sense of urgency, you know, on this team's part to get going yet. And I'm not saying that they want to fall way behind here, and I know that Francisco Lindor kind of said that yesterday. But on the other hand, you know, they've had some injuries. We know that, you know, Kipnis is on his way back. He's going to play in Columbus tomorrow and Wednesday, and I think we may see him back as early as the weekend. You know, Lonnie Chisenhall, thankfully, has come back and gotten off to a nice start, had the grand slam on Friday, had a home run on Saturday. And, you know, the pitching has not been all that good either. So there's been some things that this team's got to work on. But, you know, to sit here and start pushing the panic button, I just think is way, 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 way too early. A month from now, if they're still having these same issues with runners in scoring position and, you know, Edwin is batting .190 or whatever it might be, and they still have this real, dearth, I guess, if you will, of offense in the catcher position, yeah, then I think you can start to say, okay, we're already 60 games in. Let's see, well, what are we going to do? But right now, I just don't see it. I just think everything is just exaggerated because there's only been 12 games. If it was, if it was 50, 60 games, I think there'd be more of a timeline to go by than just, you know, 12 games in.
Right, small sample size. And again, you mentioned it right off the top there, Matt. When you have that 3-game set against Texas, you get the sweep. I was caught up in it, too. It's overreaction week in the MLB to have that first week of the season. Everybody gets excited when you can roll out and beat a team that was a playoff team last year, do it in impressive fashion. You figure, hey, 162-0, here we go, baby. It's coming for the Indians, but it's just not that way. Ebbs and flows of the season as they are. I've been really enjoying just watching the game, watching the team as they continue to work and strive to get better. Frankie Lindor, I seriously think, Matt, and I know you're probably going to have this problem as you write about it on a regular basis, is coming up with ways to, and more expletives to describe how good this kid is.
Yeah, he's amazing, and he is your budding superstar. I mean, we already saw it last year in his first full season. You know, the one thing about Lindor, and I talked to somebody the other day, Saturday's game, I was up in the box, and a couple of the writers, you know, and I was included in that, were having lunch before the game, and, you know, somebody said to me, what can you say bad about this kid? You know, there's just not enough good things. You know, and the one thing that I've been impressed with him from a standpoint of in that clubhouse is that he has become sort of a team leader very early on. You know, he's been able to, you know, not only handle the pressures of playing a key position on this team, you know, getting to the World Series, you know, hitting throughout the postseason, you know, he was one of those key components. But, you know, once you get into an off-season situation like he did, you thought, okay, maybe the kid will make a mistake. Maybe the success will get to his head. You know, not that you want to see that, but it's just human nature. I mean, it just happens a lot of times, you know, with young players, and we've seen it how many times in the NBA where a kid comes out of high school, next thing you know, he's making, you know, a couple million dollars a year, and you know, bad things tend to happen. I mean, it's very difficult to avoid temptation. There's no doubt about it. But with Frankie Lindor, he has done everything right. You know, and again, he's humble. He's been working hard. He continues to work hard. You know, he's there early. He stays late. He talks to the media. You know, he talked to the media yesterday after the loss. And like he said, look, we don't want, like I said, is kind of, a, you know, I'm paraphrasing the quote, but we don't want to fall too far behind, but we also aren't going to sit here and push the panic button. He is truly a throwback, and I think when we've talked about him before, not only with you guys, but with, you know, on other shows that I've been on, the one player that I know Terry Francona has loved to describe him as is Dustin Pedroia. And, you know, when Terry was in Boston, he always said that, you know, Dustin was one of his leaders, one of his young kids. And his attitude is infectious, and it really is. That's the same way with Lindor. You know, there was some concern about who was going to be the leader in this locker room this year. And I'm not saying Frankie's the leader of the locker room per se, but he's definitely one of those guys that has stepped up to the plate, I guess, if you will, in terms of he's not afraid to say something when something's not exactly going right. And the other thing, too, is he's not afraid to stand in front of the media, which is, you know, right now when the team is scuffling a little bit off to this kind of, you know, early, you know, kind of rough start, is not a bad thing to have.
No, that's for sure. And he's got it on the back of his shoes, the BC, be consistent. He figures if he can do that, he'll be the best he needs to be and be that team leader down the road.
Matt, is it almost maybe a little bit of a blessing, and I feel weird even saying this because they've only had one homestand, but is it maybe good that they're getting away for a little bit right now because they're scuffling a little bit at home?
Yeah, I mean, it could be. And, you know, the nice thing about this first homestand, I wrote about it on Saturday in my takeaways, is the fans are definitely coming out. And, you know, I know that there was no way that wasn't going to happen from the standpoint of how many tickets they had already sold going into this year. But the one nice thing is that, you know, you knew that obviously opening day was a sellout. There was no doubt about that. And then you kind of figured that, well, you know, you play that, what is that, that Wednesday night and the Thursday night, and that might be low crowds. But then you hope that Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you had a couple things really in your favor. Number one, they were playing a division rival, a team that, you know, usually actually draws because you got Detroit fans only, what, two and a half hours away that'll come up.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, you had absolutely gorgeous weather all 3 days of the weekend. I mean, it was amazing how beautiful for mid-April that we had our weather here in Northeast Ohio. And number three, you know, it was a holiday weekend, so you had kids from college in town. It's spring break for a lot of kids, so... you know, I know personally I had some family members, some of my nieces that wanted to go to the game on Saturday. So you had kind of those, you know, that kind of perfect storm. And I ran some numbers Saturday during the game, and they're already averaging almost 5,000 more a game. And I know it's a very small sample size, but six games in, that's not a bad number to have. And I know the Indians are happy about that. But to your point, Sam, about getting away for a little bit, I think, you know, and baseball players and managers will tell you that, you know, when you're at home, it's kind of like the NFL where there's a lot of things going, not necessarily against you, but there's a lot of other distractions. You know, you've got your family life there for the most part. You know, you've got friends and family that ask for tickets. You've got to deal with, you know, fiscal things sometimes at home and all that other type of stuff. But when you get on the road, your focus is really just on baseball. You're in a hotel, you know, your food is delivered to you. You know, you find the hotel gym or you go to the ballpark and you work out there early. It's a good thing sometimes. And you know, it's weird that then you probably could ask, well, why don't teams win more on the road? Well, there is a home field advantage. There's no doubt about it in baseball, just like in any sport. But, you know, getting away right now is not necessarily a bad thing. I think this series will be very interesting because this is a Minnesota team. I know that, you know, they didn't have a lot of success last year in baseball as a whole, but they played very well against the Indians. You remember that series, especially in August, early August, they came here and beat up the Indians 3 out of 4, and they actually went 10-9 against them last year. So this is going to be an interesting early test, and Minnesota has not played bad. They've played pretty good baseball. Again, small sample size, but this will be an interesting test for this Indians team, and then they get a chance to play the White Sox again on the road, maybe to get a little bit of revenge for losing 2 out of 3 this last week to them.
Keeping it with the road and the home kind of concept here, do you think that was a little bit of what Edwin had going on as well? First time for having a homestand as an Indian, getting the big contract, all the big money. Was he pressing a little bit, or is that just kind of a made-up narrative?
Well, he's a slow starter historically. You know, and again, I'm not using that as an excuse. I'm just throwing that out there factually. You look at his numbers in April, they're usually kind of down a little bit. And you know, the other thing that you got to take into consideration with him, first of all, I wanted to give the guy a little bit of a pass. It had to be kind of an odd week for him as a whole playing in Cleveland, and especially on opening day when he had the two double plays and everybody was on him about that. I mean, imagine, you know, you watch the team that beat you for an opportunity to go to the World Series, get their rings before the game, and then you get introduced as a new member of that team. You know, I just thought that that was really weird. He had to be going through some rather mixed emotions, and you know, and of course the fans were rabid for him when he came to the plate, and then of course I think he's pressing. I think, you know, Terry Francona said he was pressing a little bit. And then, of course, he goes out and he gets two opportunities to get in, you know, what would have been the go-ahead run each time, and he hits the double plays. And, you know, I don't know. I'm not worried about him yet because, again, you talk to any manager, and Terry has said this many times, when a player like Edwin Encarnacion gets hot, he'll get hot for a while. And he'll get hot to the point where he'll hit five home runs in six games type of thing, and everybody will forget about the slow start. You know, I'm more concerned long-term, guys, about the catcher position than I am about Edwin, because what's going on with Yan Gomes and Perez right now, I mean, it's almost like you have a pitcher hitting in the ninth hole, and I hate to say that because I don't want to be too negative on these guys, but, you know, where, you know, you could say, well, you know, right now both of those guys, meaning the catcher position, they're struggling. They struggled last year. So this isn't like a thing where, you know, Yan or Roberto's coming off a big year and they're off to a slow start. I mean, these guys struggled tremendously last year. Now, Roberto did have a pretty solid playoffs, at least early in the postseason last year. He had the home run early in the Boston series, and then, of course, he hit the home run off Lester in game one of the World Series. But, you know, historically, this isn't a guy that's going to hit 300. And Yan Gomes, since that knee injury, the numbers are downright scary. They just are. Yeah. And you just wonder, you know, what the Indians are thinking, because, I mean, right now, both those guys are a liability. I've seen so many tweets about, you know, how long can Terry Francona go with Yan Gomes? Well, let's just say this. It's not like Johnny Bench or Carlton Fisk are playing behind him. I hate to, you know, be mean about it, but it's just the truth. And you got to wonder what they're going to do. And, you know, I mean, they've got a young kid in the minors right now in Francisco Mejia, who's hitting really, really well already. But I just think it's too soon for that. I'm sure that they're hopeful that one of these two guys will get a little bit hot at the plate and kind of put that to rest, at least for a little bit. But if that kid still keeps hitting in the minors like he has been, it's going to be awfully tough to keep him down there.
Yeah, the hitting for the catcher position, absolutely.
Oh, it's been horrible. Matt Lodi, our guest, NEO Sports Insiders, talking to us here on 1590 WAKR. Sam and Brad, show live from the Q, the site of game two between the Cavs and Pacers, coming up tonight at 7 on 1590 WAKR. Matt, Jason Kipnis eventually is going to get back up here to the big squad. He's had some rehab in Akron and a little bit of a setback with a hit by pitch down in Columbus. Everybody's been trying to figure this one out. When he does eventually get back and he's ready to rock and roll, who's going down? It's not that easy of a decision, is it?
No, it's not. And, you know, the obvious choice I still think is Yandy Diaz. And, you know, and I know that this kid has played well and he's shown some defensive he's shown a nice glove at third base. He made the big play in the opener with the diving stop against the White Sox, and then made a nice play yesterday, too, even though in a losing effort. But, you know, I think you saw with Lonnie Chisenhall coming up, they sent down, obviously, Tyler Naquin, and another, you know, kind of like, wow, how do you send down a guy who was playing in the World Series and everything? These are actually good problems to have, you know, because if you think about it, if the Indians weren't a good team, you know, getting a Jason Kipnis type of player back, there'd probably be four guys they could send down. But really, if you look at that roster, about the only two options would be a guy like a Diaz or maybe a Michael Martinez. And the reason why I think it's Diaz over Martinez is pretty simple, and that is, you know, Michael Martinez can play a bunch of positions. Oh, and he can pitch now too, I guess, by the way.
I know.
we're hoping not to have to see that again, even though it was rather humorous on what was that, Thursday night. But again, I look at it, this is a situation where it's a pretty easy, unless there is an injury around this team that we don't know about. And you know how that tends to happen. All of a sudden, a relief pitcher or somebody will come up with a strained forearm or something like that, and it'll go on the 10-DL. And that might be a situation we see with this team where all of a sudden, you know, Kip comes up and then they, you know, they get somebody on the 10-day DL now that they have, which is kind of a, I think it makes for more interesting roster moves around baseball. But if none of that happens, I think Diaz is the obvious choice. And listen, this kid has been a great story. He's a very good kid. He's going to be back up at this level for a long time to come. And I think that, you know, there's definitely, though, a chance for him to get some more seasoning down in Columbus. And, you know, it would not surprise me at all if he's the guy. And, you know, Kip again playing tomorrow night and Wednesday night, and I think, again, we might see him as early as Friday or Saturday. Would not surprise me at all.
Can Diaz go out and play a little bit in the outfield too, though, to give himself that flexibility to stay?
I've heard he's got some flexibility at those positions, but, you know, with the way that, you know, young players are, I think that they're more focused in keeping him at one spot and that being third. And Okay. You know, so in that respect, I think Martinez has got a little bit more flexibility, and he is more of a true utility player, if you will, than a Yandy Diaz. So, as I said, it wouldn't surprise me if Diaz is the guy that gets done now.
Well, as president of the Yandy Diaz fan club, I'm a little disappointed, but we'll see what happens. And Michael Martinez, you mentioned his little pitching outing. What was it, 8 pitches, and he got out of a scoreless inning?
Looked good, man. He's running up there, 75, 80 mile an hour.
He really was able to get out there and throw the ball a little bit. You know, we've seen some disasters when it comes to guys, position players, taking the mound. I mean, Chris Jimenez did it last year for the Indians, and you know, and you look at that, and sometimes, you know, people get, like, offended. Like, oh, my gosh, how could they throw a position player out there? They're just giving up and everything like that. But you got to really look at it from a different perspective. And I know Terry Francona's done a nice job in basically explaining this, per se, to, you know, the media and hopefully as part of the media, then passing it along to the fans. What would it have helped the Indians at all if, let's say, they put Brian Shaw out there in the ninth inning of a game that they had almost possibility of coming back? I mean, I think they were down 10-4 or something like that, or 10-5. I mean, that's a long road back. I mean, you know, this isn't, you know, the 95 Indians where you got Bell, Baerga, and Tomey coming up in the ninth. That's asking a lot out of a team to score that many runs in one inning. So instead of that, what you hope for is you kind of save a guy like a Brian Shaw. And, you know, that was the night Josh Tomlin only lasted, what, 3 1/3, so, or 2 1/3. So you
two
put out
three,
there
yeah.
a position player, hopefully just to get 3 outs, and he did. He gave up 1 hit, but he got the 3 outs, and it was really kind of neat to see, you know, the Indians kind of saved the part of their bullpen, and, you know, they needed it for the weekend because, obviously, Friday night they needed the bullpen. Saturday they got a decent start out of Kluber, and then Carrasco pitched pretty well yesterday. He's been probably the best of the starting five so far. Still, unfortunately, the offense just didn't do it yesterday, and they end up walking out, losing 2 out of 3 to Detroit.
Matt, great stuff as always. You can check Matt out. It's Matt Lodi, NEO Sports Insider. Does a great job of covering the Indians, the Tribe, everything Northeast Ohio sports. Thanks again, Matt. We got to run. We got to get to a break. When we get back, more here live from the Quicken Loans Arena. It's the Sam and Brad Show from the floor of the Q. Don't go anywhere.